Okay, welcome everyone to this seminar for the Hellenic Observatory. We're very pleased this week we're having a seminar on Cyprus, and it's on the economy. And we're welcoming back Stelios Sakas back to the Hellenic Observatory, that is. Stelios is a research economist at the Economics Research Center in the Department of Economics at the University of Cyprus. He has a PhD in economics from Athens University of Economics and Business. He was a research economist at a research center in Seville with the European Commission, and he specializes in macroeconomics, fiscal policy, and regional economics. And he's published works in major journals, Macroeconomic Dynamics, Regional Science, European Journal of Political Economy, etc. In his career, he's had extensive policy engagements, contributing to significant flagship reports of the European Commission. He's served on expert committees and has collaborated with international bodies such as the OECD and the European Investment Bank. So we're delighted to welcome him back, and this evening he's going to talk about the Cypriot economy in the context of different challenges, the fallout from the war in Ukraine, the legacy of the COVID pandemic, and the onset of the Recovery and Resilience Fund of the European Union. And to say essentially about the trajectory, the path for recovery of the Cyprus economy. We'll do the usual thing. Stelios will speak for about 40 minutes, and then there should be plenty of time for discussion afterwards. Stelios, welcome back again.
Thank you. Thank you guys for being here this this evening. Also, thank you for the invitation, and I have very fond memories of the observatory. After 8 years, I'm back again. So just also to know, I'm not from Cyprus, actually, I'm Greek, but I work in Cyprus for about one year and a half now, so if you have any more specific Cyprus-related suggestions and feedback and comments, I'm more than welcome. So from the title, as you can see, the subject of the talk is about Cyprus and EU sanctions on Russia, macroeconomic impacts, the impacts and policy for a sustained recovery, and of course, more specifically, what we are going to do, what we are doing in this project, is that we evaluate first the macroeconomic impact of the sanctions to Russia of the economy of Cyprus. So, in essence, we will give estimates, we will give numbers about the magnitude of this foreign shock that occurred to Cyprus and to Europe in general. And then, for me, actually, we started this project working more on the sanctions part, but in essence, the important thing is what you do after this. Okay, essentially we will focus on some recovery policies, some growth policies in the context of the Next Generation EU and the recovery, the Cyprus-specific recovery and resilience plan, which is composed of some investment policies and structural reforms. We will talk all about this as we go by.
Stelios, I forgot to mention, I think the project which you're reporting on is supported by the Hellenic Observatory and the Leventis Foundation. So let me just emphasize our gratitude to the Leventis Foundation.
The Leventis Foundation, of course. Yes, I should have said this as well. So this is the plan of the talk, very, very briefly. I will start with some motivation. I will try to back up this by data. Some of these things might be already known to you, but for the sake of discussion, it's nice to have a look at them again. Then I will present an economic model, very, very loosely speaking. I will just give you some blocks of the model, no mathematics, no equations, because usually these models are quite technical. I will show you how we present, how we simulate these exogenous shocks, these policies, the shocks and the policies after. And I will give you some main findings. I call them main findings because we just finished the project. So now we're in the process of, you know, doing some robustness checks, sensitivity checks, and after the feedback and after we circulate the paper, the project, we will have a working paper with many more of these findings analytically, and then some time for the discussion. So now if we go back 2 years, just when the war started. Of course, there were many, many concerns raised of, on what will happen to many economies across Europe, but specifically for Cyprus, everybody was worried because it is widely known that, you know, Cyprus is flooded kind of the last three decades from Russians, actually Russian investments, and in general the Russian element, from what I have seen myself, the last year and a half is quite strong, and it used to be quite stronger some years before, especially before the crisis. So there were some bold statements in the press, like Cyprus is losing its Russian, confronting existential questions about its economy, and things like that, that Cyprus will be in turmoil. So given this feedback, I can understand why everybody was worried, but we can see what happened in the end. Now, a brief summary of what the sanction is, I mean, in this particular context. Sanctions, of course, can be against individuals, diplomatic sanctions, political sanctions, if I can make an abuse of terminology, to Putin, Lavrov, Russian state Duma members, businessmen, oligarchs, and so on, but also, more importantly, economic sanctions, for which we care about in this project, related to every aspect of economic activity, from finance, energy, to trade in goods and services. Therefore, the aim was to weaken Russia's economic base and make its access to critical technology, critical related to the war, of course, much more difficult. However, now we are 2 years after the war, it's the third year of the war and the conflict, many people are raising concerns how and if these sanctions, these economic sanctions work. And the bottom line is that now they say that these sanctions do not really work, I mean, to make Russia worse off. I put this extract from The Economist because it's the most recent one, about, let's say, two to three weeks ago. It was the same paper that 2 years ago they were saying that these sanctions might create a cash crunch or even a coup. But it's the same paper now that they say that here how quickly global trade and financial flows can find a path around barriers and overcome sanctions. So, in essence, what Russia did is to find other markets to continue its economic activity, which makes perfect sense. And I say that makes perfect sense because some of these things were already quite known to academic economists, political scientists, historians, and so on, that agree in this main fact that sanctions, at least economic sanctions, effectiveness as a response to terrorism and then any other kind of conflict or as a foreign economic policy tool has lost its potential. Actually, you can consult this paper by Felbermayr. They have constructed what they call the global sanctions database, in which they list all the sanctions in the last 20 years until 2016 and discuss about how effective they are given their objectives and so on. Now, of course, we know as economists that sanctions can, of course, exert negative impacts at the firm level, given the fact that exporting or even importing firms can, you know, employ sanction avoidance practices, which I think that Russia did, of course. And the thing that Cyprus should do, I guess, but we can discuss this in the end. So, from a macro perspective, when the war began, there were some people that, you know, tried to estimate the effect, the macroeconomic effect, mainly on GDP. And actually, this person here, this guy here, he's a professor of the economics department at the LSE, Benjamin Moll, and his co-author, they tried to estimate a quite, you know, extreme scenario of a total sudden stop of Russian gas imports. This created a lot of fuss in the German press, but also Chancellor Scholz had to reply to them in a very, you know, judgmental way. In essence, the bottom line is from this, you know, very recent literature that the effect from sanctions will not be that hard from European economies. It would span from 0.2 to 3%, given different scenario. And for other countries, this is for Germany, and maybe for some other countries, it will span from 1 to 4 or even 5%. Nevertheless, for Cyprus, there are not that many studies that report the results. There is a recent one from Almasan and Gomez in Regional Science, I think, Journal of Regional Science, but they report a 6% reduction in aggregate output, and some other ones, so that span from 2% to 6%, I would say, overall. Just a spoiler, we find more or less the same magnitude of results, but we make many more assumptions and different scenarios than them. Now, what is the main issue here is that, of course, Cyprus cannot avoid, you know, imposing sanctions on the economy of Russia. And what we know by now is that even if the initial shock was supposed to be tremendous and very hard, Germany and the rest of the EU countries, they managed somehow to cope with this exogenous shock, given the fact that they reduced a lot energy consumption. Also, climate change helped a lot in this direction. So, all in all, they suffered, let's say, they had to suffer much less than expected. However, and this is the main difference here, we ask ourselves if Cyprus is different, and the question is that, of course, it's different, and I will try to back up this, to support this with some macroeconomic data. Very standard stuff. So this is the balance of payments, the trade in goods and services of Cyprus with Russia in terms of exports from Cyprus to Russia and imports from Russia to Cyprus. So the blue bar is the one with the trade activity with the rest of the world. And then the orange bar, in terms of services always, I'm talking about services at least, is the one with Russia only. The first thing to note here is that services with trade, mainly exports from Cyprus to Russia, is about the 1/5 or the 25% of the total activity. So Cyprus exports a lot in terms of services, like financial services, bookkeeping, auditing, tourism, and so on. Tourism is a tradable good in the Cyprus national accounts, of course. So it trades a lot. So if you start from 2019, we can skip 2020 because it was the COVID year. Again, focus on 2019 and 2021. You can see here that this part here, this orange part, has been halved already by 2022, which is the first year of the sanctions. So trade in services, exports, they took a very, very significant shock, negative shock, relative to what happened in other countries. Of course, if you decompose further, you can see this in services and more explicit in other things. And a nice example, of course, is to see what happened in tourism. The blue color represents Russians. Nobody came to Cyprus for vacations, of course. And also the financial services here, by the end of 2022, there's a downward trend, which we have only data for 2022 now, but I'm pretty sure that in 2023, the picture will be kind of same. Next part has to do with foreign direct investment, FDI. Again, we have the comparison between Cyprus and the rest of the world, Russia and the rest of the world, either in terms of stock, the stock of a foreign direct investment, or flows, so year-over-year transactions. What you should note here is that transactions from Russia, here actually, inward, from Russia to Cyprus, foreign direct investment from Russia to Cyprus, actually it's not an investment anymore, it's a disinvestment. So capital flies out of Cyprus, Russian capital, okay? So balance of payments in terms of goods and services and foreign direct investment, I would say that constitute the direct links, the direct shocks. Of course, we have some indirect shocks in terms of the shock caused by the inflation hikes, mainly coming through energy. Why I'm saying this is indirect? Because Cyprus does not import is not an importer, let's say, of Russian gas directly. It imports a bit of gas, but mostly oil from other countries. Nevertheless, of course, inflation in a global system passes through the economy through other linkages, of course. And of course, Cyprus is not an exception. Energy inflation was very high. It hit over, you know, around 50%. Now it goes down, of course. 2023, 2024, it will be much lower. And core inflation, of course, recorded a very high number as well. So indirectly, again, through inflation, imported inflation, of course, this hits the economy of Cyprus as well. Now, that's the part related, that was the part related to the sanctions, mostly. But now if we take a step back again and try to see the situation just a bit before the war, what was the economy looking like? Not only for Cyprus, in Europe in general, I would say, most economies were trying to rebound from the pandemic. Of course, they had to deal with some inflationary pressures caused by supply-side disruptions and some delayed consumptions, and delayed consumption mainly from tourism. People were allowed to travel again, and this was, of course, creating another inflationary spiral. Now, EU collectively, and that was a milestone moment for the EU, tried to address all these challenges by establishing the so-called Next Generation EU Plan, and then this instrument, the Recovery and Resilience Facility, which is around 670 billion euros in the form of grants and loans, and they allocate this to EU member states. And of course, in this context, Cyprus, of course, has to submit it years, some about 2 years ago, its plan, and has to and will benefit from this new instrument. Now, the point is that initially this facility was created, you know, to address the challenges from COVID-19 crisis. It's a bad coincidence, but it's still a coincidence that the war came just to reinforce this. So at some point, again, the European Commission and all the members, of course, had to amend their plans. They had to redesign somehow, not to a full extent, but they had to redesign their plans, and they had to include more energy-related issues like security, diversification of energy sources, efficiency, reliance on fossil fuels, and so on. So this reinforced the necessity for a good implementation of the recovery and resilience plan. Now, more specifically for Cyprus, if we can classify this comes from the original Cypriot Recovery and Resilience Plan. It consists of these three main pillars: green transition, digital transition, economic and social resilience, which they include many type of investment policy interventions, investment reforms, and so on. For those of you who are familiar with economic European economic programs, this is just a nightmare. If you go through all the reforms and the policy interventions, it's a never-ending story. They have many more things which kind of overlap each other. Nevertheless, this is in very broad terms how they will allocate this amount of money, this 1.2 billion money, which is around 4.8% of Cyprus's GDP. And the point here is that either they will implement it through standard public investments, the way we know it, or through structural reforms that they have a more, you know, longer-run perspective. Again, this is another classification. So again, I'm telling you, you can reclassify things according to other criteria. The list is endless. But again, they try to assess, to address public health, transition to green economy, resilience, digitization, and the standard thing of labor market, enhancing the labor market. So that was the second part, let's say, that we are dealing with. And how we are going to assess this? We will use what we call, we have given it a name, Cyprus General Equilibrium Model, or the CYPGEM, which is a model that we developed at the University of Cyprus, at the Economics Research Center. And actually, it's a cousin of this kind of models, of the European Commission Quest 3 model, and the model used by the ECB. It belongs to the traditional, to what they call now the new Keynesian models, macroeconomic models. The difference is that we tailor this to mimic some stylized facts of the economy of Cyprus, and in particular, the sectoral activity, simply because Cyprus is an economy that is services-based. Around 70% of the economy of Cyprus has to do with services, service activities. And also in terms of the external position, our model takes into account this because still, even after many years have passed after the crisis, Cyprus' external position, meaning that the debt that belongs to foreign creditors is still quite high. So a good economic model has to take into account at least some of these structural elements before making any kind of analysis. I will skip this. That was a comment about how much we trust these models. Nevertheless, I will give you a very stylized representation of the model. So the part in green has to do with the public sector in our model. So the public sector has the treasury that collects taxes from households and taxes from firms and gives benefits or subsidies back to firms. There are some state firms that produce public goods. And also the treasury can issue government bonds to generate additional revenues. The yellow blocks, we call them the households. So the households supply labor to firms and earn labor income. And we split them in a very barbaric way, if I can say, either to capitalists or to workers. The difference here is that workers rely mostly on their labor income and some benefits received from the government, and capitalists that also can accumulate wealth and invest in terms of capital and financial capital. And the most, let's say, important part here of the model is how we model the firm side, the production side. We split them between non-tradable goods sector, like construction, manufacturing, and some other, I don't remember the classifications now, and tradable goods and services, like financial services, businesses, bookkeeping, auditing, hotel management, and things like that, which in turn they use either imported goods to produce, so they engage in trade with the rest of the world, or they produce goods that they are going to be domestically consumed or exported again to the rest of the world. So in essence, imagine sanctions in a model like this should hit two parts of the economy. First, the imported goods that are coming from the rest of the world, and the foreign direct investment that are inputs in the production of the private economy, the tradable goods services. And from the other way around, sanctions, because Cyprus exports a lot to Russia, okay, as we said in the beginning, should be imposed here in the exported goods part.
Can you just clarify, when you referred to capitalists and you got capitalists and firms, by capitalists do you mean investors?
Investors, yes. It's a thing only, you know, of terminology. Some people, they call them also Ricardian agents.
We can call them many things.
Yes, exactly. So sanctions hit these two parts of the economy. In turn, the recovery and resilience plan should work, if I can say it better, should work through the treasury, meaning that the Cypriot government will implement a public investment plan, at least for the years of the implementation period, and then some structural reforms, which mainly will hit the firms, the production side. They will try to, you know, to make product market reforms, and this will then diffuse to the other parts of the economy. So, as I told you in the beginning, regarding sanctions, now we can turn to the simulation and the results about sanctions. We have two direct links. As I told you, a drop which we calculate it will be about 5% of the GDP. Another direct link through inward FDI, the ratio's share, will drop by 100%. It's about 1% of the GDP of Cyprus. And then an indirect link through imported goods inflation. And regarding the sanction duration, this is a bit the most tricky part that we have to make, you know, some a very ad hoc assumption. It's about its duration. Now we are in the third year. We take this as a minimum, and we assume that they will last minimum for three years. Of course, we can do sensitivity checks and increase this duration in our model. Now, I will give you some main results regarding the most typical macroeconomic variables: output, consumption, investment, and employment. So, in the blue bars, you will see the shock caused by the reduction in exports from Russia, from Cyprus to Russia. Orange bar, imported goods inflation shock, and the other one, the yellow, is about inward FDI shock. So all in all, this is causing a 5.5% reduction in total, so around here. And it's mainly driven, the first year at least, by exports, and then by the shock, if you decompose this, by the shock of increases in the imported prices, in the imported goods prices. So the average drop, more or less, for the first 3 years, from 2022 to 2025, will be about 2%. The main difference here is that while exports have a strong effect the first years, then their effect diminishes relatively quickly. And what it lasts, what it contributes most, is the shock driven by, is the impact driven by inflation on imported goods. And this in turn harms investment much more. As you can see, since you have much more expensive imported goods, this will harm the economy much more in order, you know, to take investment decisions. Also, FDI has quite of a shock, quite of an impact on private investments. But in the end of the day, it has, you know, a mild impact, a very mild impact on total output. So, very general, very briefly, the impact of sanctions can be quite important, at least for the first year, but then it depends on how the economy can substitute to other markets its export production. And we can discuss this, of course, in the end. Now we'll turn to the simulations to discussing the effects of simulating.
So the effect of the sanctions on the exports component,
yes,
doesn't disappear because you assume that the sanctions have an end date. It disappears because
they have an end date in the model. They have an end date, but also we have given the same end date to the imported goods inflation as well. We assume that inflation on imported goods will go back to the pre-war level
in three years.
As the exports will do. However, through the dynamics of the model, through it works, through the way it works, the effect of imports is much takes
say
much more.
Is like a shift to domestic consumption or a shift to exports in the rest of
it
the
can be either a shift to domestic consumption or a shift to other markets.
Yeah. Yeah. So
in our model, it's mostly to domestic consumption. Mostly because I do not have yet data on what happened with other markets. We still have to wait a bit. And I have left this comment exactly.
So the rest of the world doesn't have a shock from the...
No, in this model, no. We try to isolate only the shock on Cyprus, not what happens to the rest of the world.
Because, you know, I've done this as part of my master's, so I have to remind myself. Do these shocks lead to a new equilibrium? So, meaning that, you know, there is a drop in consumption of those imported, you know, the rise in price or the sanctions, or they're not coming or you don't export them. And let's say that then there is an end point in the sanctions. After the end point, would you go back to your previous behavior?
Yes, or there is a new... to the initial equilibrium or to the baseline here, which in our model, it should be 2022.
Can you model it to
go to another steady state?
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
Okay.
We can.
Do you do it?
Not yet, but we can. Okay. We'll take this comment for the sensitivity analysis for the checks. Okay, good one. Now we'll turn to the investment to our recovery and resilience plan investment grants and loans simulation. So not the reforms yet. This is how the plan will be allocated. It will be mostly grants, like 0.7% each year. So if you divide this by six, you will get this number. There is a pre-financing of 13% already, and you allocate it mostly through public investments and a bit of government consumption, and you divide it, we assume a linear profile. Now, what we get here is that real output, real gross domestic product, will increase by 1.5% by the end of the implementation period, by 2026. And it will have some long-lasting effects of about, you are higher than your starting point of about 0.5% of the GDP, which is quite a bit. If you assume that this was only 0.8% in total, it's quite something to get 1.5% by the end of the program. Consumption, private consumption will follow the same way as well. Private investment, it will begin to increase after the end of the period, because here we have some crowding out effects. So public consumption crowds out a bit private investment. This is a classic behavior in these kind of models. Of course, you have, because the state spends more now, you have an increase in the total demand, and it will drive some inflationary pressures, very mild one. This will make initially the economy a bit less competitive, but as the effect materializes, then you will see that this is depicted also in the increased competitiveness through exports. Now, with the red dashed line, we have also a scenario with implementation delays, meaning that sometimes, you know, these programs are not fully absorbed. It takes time for bureaucracy reasons and things like that to be implemented. We assume a mild case of 1 year, and this can, of course, can mitigate a bit the effects. By the end of the program, you can have 1.3% increase, 1.25 around, which is a bit less than the 1.5% overall. Now we turn to the interesting part, let's say, to the final part, which is the most interesting. I think I have time, no?
Five
minutes, okay. So then we try to simulate the reforms to the model counterparts. Again, as I told you, the reforms is a huge list of several reforms that a model, a macroeconomic model, of course, cannot accommodate all this. We cannot include the whole world in this model. We try to link them with structural indicators in the data, like product market regulation, EU innovation scoreboard, justice scoreboard. And then we take evidence, we rely to the empirical literature in order to try to calculate the sensitivity of some of our economic variables. This is how we do our mapping. Since I don't have time, I will try to skip this, I will explain this, but we can come back later. I will just give you this how we do this, because it's interesting. I have chosen a bad state, let's say, for Cyprus, and a good one. I will explain you what I mean. If, let's say, we want to model the reform about modernizing public and local authorities, the public sector in general, the justice system, we use as a proxy the civil justice reform, the change in the length of court proceedings in the EU, which is something like this. You see here, Cyprus ranks poorly. It takes more than 1,000 days to resolve a case, administrative, civil, or whatsoever. And then, given the evidence from the empirical literature, we calculate that in order to close the gap with the top performers, those guys here, we have to simulate an increase of 1.2% percentage points in the total factor productivity in the model. Similarly, this is the good example here. if you see what happens in terms of innovation, Cyprus all of a sudden is among the top competitors, the strong innovators in Europe. Nevertheless, still, it can exploit the funding that comes from Europe to close the gap. That's an ad hoc assumption with the top three performing, let's say, by 50 years, in 10 years, and in our model, this would require an increase of 1.14 percentage points in the productivity parameters.
So you mean it will produce an increase in TFP, or it would require? What do you mean?
Would require. It would require.
So how? What does that mean?
Maybe I'm confused.
No, because you say, so in order to have, so the reform targets the amount of R&D or the duration,
yes,
of...
Yes. If you want to map this, because we don't have R&D in our model, we have total factor productivity.
Okay.
And there is a link between productivity and R&D. You should get this number in order, you know, to achieve, yep, closing the gap by 50% in 10 years. So we do this for many other reforms, like labor market reforms, product market reforms, and this is the picture we get. I will go fast through this. Real GDP by 2026, the end of the implementation period, can increase by 4.5%. Huge effects on private investment. It gives a lot of incentives for investors. Employment will follow. But the important thing is that the gains are quite long lasting. So after 25 years, still GDP is higher than 6.2% relative to the previous case. And this is the decomposition according to productivity, product market, and so on. Just, I have to say this, because you have modeled only a subset of reforms, these are lower bound estimates. We expect if you try to model more, to include more and more in a model, not in this model, actually in every other kind of analysis, you can get even higher results. So do I have time to close with just two slides? So concluding, of course, EU sanctions to Russia will have non-negligible effects. However, this is my personal opinion. This depends, apart from economic reasons, of course, geopolitical context. There is another war going on in the region. The important thing is, in economic terms now, how you reorient or you substitute. We are not pretty sure if this happens right now. And if it happens through exporting to other markets, so substituting, or again to Russia through other markets, because also this happens as well, but also maybe it's just a speculation. In this regard, the full and timely implementation is a significant growth opportunity, and in the short run at least, it can almost counterbalance the adverse effects of sanctions. Final, I see this, and I think everybody could agree that this is an important opportunity for Cyprus, first to change a bit, not to change actually, to move to a new growth model, to a new business model. Given the strong expertise that Cyprus has in this services sector, it really has a strong expertise, which you can see it in many indexes, like the innovation scoreboard and things like that. But of course, this requires improved governance, especially in the fields of corruption and modernizing the public sector and the justice system, as I showed you before, improve the competitiveness, focus mostly on quality in the product markets. If I may draw a comparison here, there are other countries with similar size as Cyprus, similar expertise, like in professional services, for instance, Lithuania and so on. But they have different labor costs and things like that. So you have to compete in other things in order, to get the market share. And also they have to resolve also the non-performing loans, which is still a huge problem in Cyprus. We try to implement this in our model. We will try to do so. And the important point is that some years ago there was capital coming in Cyprus. Now capital flies out. And this creates a lot of problems in terms of, might create a lot of problems in terms of the borrowing capacity of the economy and in terms of how much available collateral is it out there. So that's all. Thank you so much.
Well,
Well, thank you. I'm going to open it up in a moment to questions from people who are much more expert in this area than I. Can I just perhaps a couple of points on your last slide? I understood you to be saying, Sergio, that the expenditure that comes from the funding that comes from the Recovery and Resilience Plan will, quote, almost counterbalance the effect of sanctions on Russia. Is that correct?
Well, that's half the truth, actually, because...
So the impact of the actions on Russia are greater than the impact of the Recovery and Resilience funding, is
that... At least in the first years, yes, the impact of sanctions is much, much worse. It dies quickly, and then Cyprus, like a model, the model tells us that cumulatively after many years, I mean, you can gain this loss back. The point here is that you could have gained this loss even more without the sanctions. But at least, from my perspective, it's a bad coincidence that, you know, they are picking to reinforce the necessity of the RRP. These effects from the RRP might take place irrespective of the war.
Okay.
But you should take this more into account now, given the war.
Can you show us your final slide?
Here.
Yes. When you talk about the effects, for example, in terms of improved governance, control of corruption, rule of law, and regulatory quality, there seem to be some built-in assumptions here that more money involves greater digital techniques or the use of technology, whatever. The question really is, how can you go from the impact of the RRF to calibrating the control of corruption, which must have a strong cultural dimension to it? How can you make assumptions that the levels of corruption, the improvement of the rule of law will be X rather than X minus one?
Well, yes, that's a fair comment. So, first things first, this is a model. It does not try to explain the whole world. You have, in any case, to make assumptions regarding how you model things. So, let me just, probably I will have to repeat some things here. So, this is mostly a what-if scenario. So, what would happen if some things will change? So, if...
But the causal effect between money and rule of law...
This I cannot control it. This I take it for granted in the model.
Yes, it's the taking for granted which I'm...
Yes. This is the modeling world, unfortunately.
Okay.
You cannot take, all this kind of political economy elements or political elements into the model. You have to make assumptions in order, to make some calculations. The what if, and take it for granted, thing is, comes in this part. We assume that if you spend this amount of money, then normally you expect to improve some things, in your justice system, in digitizing your public sector and things like this. We have a mathematical model here. We need to provide inputs in order to have outputs. In order to provide inputs, you have to link some things. So if you spend this 1%, let's say, in R&D or in, modernizing your public sector, then empirical literature, applied econometricians like Vasilis, for example, will give us some point estimates, some elasticities, or what will be the effect in total factor productivity, or the productivity. This is what we have in our model. So in this part, in the TFP, everything boils down in this thing. So we need actually an estimate from the literature in order to use it as an input in the model.
Yeah. I can see if an improvement in the EU justice scoreboard or an improvement in terms of rule of law occurs, then there can be assumptions drawn from the literature in terms of the knock-on effects for the economy. But what I'm having difficulty with is the assumptions that come from increasing funding by a certain amount and assuming that it improves the rule of law and control of corruption by a designated amount. This seems to be, is that what economists would refer to as a guess?
It's not a guess, it's a calculation from the data and after after a thorough econometric analysis, if I might say. So we have to trust these things.
From?
From what?
No, it's from the data, which is from where?
From whatever database. I mean, people go out there, econometricians go out there and collect data in order to study a relevant question. So if there's an econometrician out there that wants to study how much, if you spend this amount of money, there are people that are doing this. If you spend this amount of money, how much it will give to your productivity?
That I understand.
And then we take this number and we fit it. We fit this in our model.
But I think, sorry if I can do it. So the reforms part of the RRP is not money. Yeah, it's a commitment to reforms. Some of the money is conditional.
Some of the money, yes.
So this is like, you know, the Cyprus came up saying we're going to improve our legal system, the courts. So I think, you know, in a way, you can either say that, you know, we take no face value, we believe them, which fails the political economy test. But so in that sense, it's an upper bound, you know, if they do 50% of what they promised. But I guess in defense of that, one could say the same with sanctions, you know, are sanctions fully implemented? And so, of course, you take the sanctions for granted. You say that, you know, there's 100% compliance on that. But then if I can chip in half a question, but you can also produce a kind of a robustness or a kind of calibration that includes 50% delivery on all the reports.
Yes, yes, you can. We have done this for the investment parts.
Okay.
We have done this for the investment parts. This is the red dashed line,
yeah,
in which we assume some implementations will delay. So we assume that the money will spend later. So it will take some time for the money to be absorbed fully, and this produces literally worse results. You can do the same for reforms, but reforms, given that, okay, as you said, there's no face value and things like that, we start from very mild assumptions. We take for granted that this will give that point estimate, and then we fit this in the model. There's no other way in such a model that you can estimate reforms, but these are economic reforms in an economic model. They are not actually political reforms. This is the point.
Okay, perhaps. Okay.
Thank you. Two questions, one on sanctions and one on RRF. On sanctions, I think the problem with the approach you're following is that you assume that at some point we return to normality, and that will come through either export sector or consumption. My question is, to what extent, in the case of Cyprus, we have long-lasting effects in the business sector itself, because some businessmen are moving out of the country, others are prohibited from, you know, touching their assets, reputation risk comes in place. So to what extent these long-lasting effects are being captured in your thinking, in a way?
The long-lasting effects are actually from which kind of shock, mostly? Because for the things that you have your concerns, these are the direct links, mostly the exports part. The other things, the import goods inflation, is external. They are external things. They are driven mostly by what happens around the globe. So for this part, honestly, with the data that we have up to this point, I cannot tell. Because we have only data, the Central Bank of Cyprus provides data only for 2022 up to now. Next year, I think in 6 months probably, we will have updated data, and we can see if this story holds or not, or kind of, or what are the different assumptions that, you know, could explain things better. My main question my main question. My main concern is that, and this is why I need some feedback, is exactly this, because I think you focus on this thing. Do firms, you know, reorient their exports and to whom? I mean, where it goes. Do they substitute with domestic, with foreigners, with Russians through other ways or not? Still, this is under investigation, if I might say, and honestly, I cannot know now. So if I can, let's say, to defend our approach, this is an ex-ante analysis, since we don't have all the data. We can calculate the real effect after we have some, you know, more analytical data in this front. So ex-ante, this is a thing that, okay, I can believe it. I can believe it simply because the amount of exports that, you know, goes to Russia in terms of Cyprus GDP is around 5%. And if you use this as an input to the model, it gives you around 4.5%, for exports around 4.5. So you decrease demand by 5%, and this is reflected in aggregate GDP.
What I'm trying to say, if I may, is that when you look at exports of goods, it's a kind of one-off transaction. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at exports of services, a consulting company working with Russians, for example, then it's a networking effect.
Yes.
These guys have been working with the Russians for 20 years. And it will be a long-lasting effect to shift to other markets. So it's a different kind of
argument. But legally they should cut relations with
them. Yeah, of course. This is what we're saying.
So either they have to re-export, to reorient to other markets, so they can use this expertise to substitute with other markets, or they have to find other ways, if I might say, illegal ways, to, you know, to go around the barriers. Okay. This I cannot tell. Of course, with a model like this, it would be, you know, kind of irresponsible.
But the adjustment can't be overnight.
They can. They can be.
Now, let me ask you this one interesting question about RRF. And I'm coming back to the intuition that Kevin was suggesting and the calibration problem that was raised. To what extent do you look back to previous experience of Cyprus implementing structural funds? Because that will guide you in the calibration process itself.
I think I have Vasilis here, who is a cohesion policy expert, and I can ask him.
Okay,
we have, I mean, now, after so many years of, you know, so many rounds of cohesion policy, we have all the necessary data to make assumptions on how Cyprus implements European programs. The question here is that, and maybe Vasilis, I mean, he might know, is I think this time things are much more strict in terms of implementation. The deadlines are much more strict, the guidelines are much more strict. The way funds are being, you know, given to the country have changed, if I'm not wrong, with respect to what was happening in the cohesion policy. Now, in order to get the money, you have all you have to fulfill the criteria already.
So, I mean, you know, getting the money is easier, and that was the whole purpose of simplifying the procedure. There's no regional management authorities, you know, it just goes to the minister can just spend the money.
There's no troika.
There's no troika, no, but also in relation to cohesion policy, that this is easy money, and that's actually on the discussion about the revision of cohesion policy, is the managing authorities are pushing the Commission to implement the RRF system for cohesion policy, because it's got freer money. There's two conditions. One is the condition of that some of them are loans, which wasn't, you know, the case with the...
Just a parenthesis, loans for Cyprus are not that big. It's like 5%, so it's it really counts nothing in terms of impacts and in terms of how they're going to repay. It's like 200 million, less than 200 million, so I think it's not that big of a burden in public debt and how you're going to repay.
If
you compare it with Greece, in Greece it's about 40%.
So yes, that, but the other thing is the conditionality of the reforms. So you have to actually promise the reforms.
This is the different
and this
part.
Is more thoroughly, because there was a conditionality for cohesion policy also for structural reforms, but it was through the, I still forget the name, but the European semester. So the European Commission through the European Semester would say that Greece needs to fix its legal system.
Yes.
And then if the report next year came that they did absolutely nothing, then there could be some problems with absorbing cohesion funds. But in practice, it never was. Whereas here, with the RRF, it's much more.
It's much more strict in this sense.
So in that sense, you think implementation should be better, more forward this
hopefully,
time.
Hopefully, if you go to the online platform of RRP absorption, I think RRP scoreboard, something like this, you can see that Cyprus does pretty good. I mean, in this regard, but it might be a good thing to compare with. The previous experience of Cyprus in terms of cohesion policy, yes. Okay. Actually, to be honest, I don't remember how much money Cyprus was getting in terms of GDP. This economy, in order to have a comparison that would make sense, but still I have to check on these things, yes. Thank you.
Other points?
I didn't even do computer observability with my master, so more disadvantaged than other reasons. But I thought that one of the kind of sexy things that you can do with these models is that you can assume that the forms fit into the parameters of the model. Sorry, the elasticity of the parameters of the model. Whereas if I didn't misunderstand this, you are changing the, so everything fits into total factor productivity. So, if I implement labor market reforms, it doesn't change my weight curve.
I didn't have too much time. I showed the only things that could fit to total factor productivity. Yeah. We have other things as well, like the product market reforms, mm-hmm. that we should change in the model what we call markup elasticities. Okay. Markup is about how competitive the market is, and if you increase markups in the product market, then you can be. You are less competitive, you decrease markups, you are much more competitive. We use, again, we rely on the same take it for granted approach, in which we rely on the product market regulation index, and then we map it to the markup elasticities in the model, the markups in the two sectors. So not everything goes to productivity, some things go to productivity, the total factor productivity, other things go to the product market regulation of the markups, other things go to labor elasticities, mm-hmm. labor market elasticities.
So the results you showed us include all of these?
Yes, oh. Yes. It's each one of those is a different mapping. So the only things, I showed the only things about the blue bars, about productivity reforms. For these productivity reforms, we focus on the total factor productivity. For the rest, we use other
okay, so you also have the information, but because that was my follow-up question. I mean, I cannot see very well from here. But then the main long-term component of the main effect on output comes from product market reforms.
Yes. For the subset of reforms you have chosen, this is the because you have chosen, I said it before presenting the results. We have chosen only a subset of reforms, because if you go through the RRP, there are hundreds of reforms, and you have to make assumptions on how you will, merge them into a thing that makes sense, modeling-wise. Okay?
Yeah.
For this subset of reforms, product market seems to have, a strong effect as well. But this way, I said, if you try to model other things as well, to include other things might have a stronger effect. This I don't know, and this is why I said in the beginning, this is just a lower bound estimate using this model. I see that the results could be even stronger. If you go to the report of the European Commission that uses a similar model, they come with effects for Cyprus in the order of 15-18%. Now, since I have worked in the Commission and now I have some experience on it, and this goes very well with this comment I didn't refer to. So this is a Commission plan. Okay, of course they are going to say that things are good in this respect. Okay, that if the plan will be super successful, everything will go the right way, no delays and things like that. Delays there will be, but in any case, the program will be successful. Now, if you go to politicians, again, some, let's say 2 years ago, when they tried to calculate the effect of a Russian sudden stop, let's say, on imports, then it was this guy here from the LSE, Benjamin Moll, the professor, and his team, his co-author, that they came up with some estimates. They presented this publicly. Some of the members of the team, they also belong to the economic team of the chancellor, but the chancellor was furious. Okay, he didn't like this take it for granted approach, of course, and he said that it's honestly irresponsible to calculate around with some mathematical models that they don't really work. Of course, their intention was not to, you know, to say that this is the whole truth. They just gave a channel, you know, an estimate of what will happen even if you cut, you know, totally impose an embargo on Russian imports. Of course, this is just a policy recommendation for politicians, you know, to have some estimates. It's not the whole truth, of course. Also, Lagarde, that, you know, runs an institution full of mathematical models and people like me, she said that we're a tribal clique and we just cope.
Maybe some truth.
Some truth, but okay, you cannot say this to your employees.
But also that's why there is a controversy now. People don't like hearing these images. There was a poll recently.
Yes. These are just estimates, they are not policy, you know.
Yes.
Political decisions, of course. Okay. And this is what, you know, I had to defend also our work in this respect.
Okay. Other comments? Questions?
So, is it possible to include more granularity in the sectors of the economy?
Of the model? In the model? Yes.
And it doesn't the European model Quest have more sectors?
No, the European model does not. The Quest doesn't have more sectors. The model I was working in the Commission, the Romola model, it's about regions and cohesion policy. It has even more sectors, so you can shock each sector separately as well.
Because I guess for Cyprus, one of the things is this kind of, you know, economic sectoral transformation and how the economy rebalances. It's not only that. I mean, you can say that, you know, the consultancy and financial services and business to business services, they can shift from, I don't know, from Russia to Kazakhstan or maybe to the Emirates or whatever. But some of it is kind of, you know, an Eldorado that finished. You know, you will not find the next state with many oligarchs that they come to you to launder money and things. This is not recorded, is it? So in a way, you need to go somewhere else. You know, maybe you need some of these businesses may go to service businesses in Europe, where different rules apply, and some of these businesses may turn to something else, I don't know, fintech and...
True, that's
right. So in that sense, you know, wouldn't the granularity give you this, allow you to explore this kind of system?
Still, you have, yes, you have to play again with what we call elasticities of substitution, yeah, in such a kind of models, and how, you know, sectors substitute each other. There is a tricky thing here, that also this guy Benjamin always reported also in his work, but the substitution between sectors, it's more of a, you know, it's a more of a long-term perspective, so it's a bit inelastic in the short run. So you need, I guess, you need not a year, 2, 3, 5 years in order, you know, to restructure your economy and find, you know, new customers, new clients, if I might say. So in this regard, again, we have to make many assumptions, you know, to come up with many assumptions regarding this export elasticity. In other words, how we can model the new destinations. And this is a tricky part. If we had, you know, more information, I could do it, of course. But still, I mean, the war is ongoing. Still, we do not have this information. Again, we have to rely on scenarios, I guess. But I think we have to play a bit more with the with the new markets, kind of.
Can you go to the plots, to the results, and have some more understanding of the results question?
Which part of the results?
So
this or the reforms?
The next one, yeah, the reforms. I think. Both, yeah, go to the next one, I think. So let's start with that one. Okay, here, so there's a spike when it comes to tax revenues in 2026. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, I see this kind of fluctuation as well occurring in the total employment thing. Is it related to the opening of sanctions or something? Or is it something else?
It's related to two things. One thing is that the spike is about when the program, when the implementation period is over. It's 2026 here. So the money that you get and the productivity, the first productivity effects that you get, I'm going to stop here, okay? And then it needs some time, you know, for the effects, for the impact of the rest of the reforms to materialize, and then you gradually go up. Tax revenues, I mean, I wouldn't worry about this because the spike is only temporal. Maybe it's just a modeling issue here, which I'm not quite sure why it happens, but I guess it should be from the money that are, you know, being generated from all these productivity effects.
But if I go back to total employment and I can see the same kind of structure, then there's a drop. It's like what? There's a drop in employment when it's the end of the implementation?
It shouldn't be a drop in employment by the end of the implementation. It should be, it should, modeling wise, it should be a drop by the end of the implementation. And then as the productivity, the effects from the effects from the reforms materialize, then employment and then the other macro variables should go higher again. These spikes, you know, are kind of what we call them, some general equilibrium effects, are very temporal. Okay.
And can you go to the other plot, a few slides back? This one. So the negative inflation part, this one, yeah.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, there's a rise in inflation, then there's this is a growth rate, so there is a reduction, or it's an actual negative inflation, so there's deflation occurring in the economy?
No, it's a growth rate. It's a deviation from the baseline.
Okay.
It's a deviation from the baseline. So first you have some, since you spend a lot, the state spends a lot, this creates some demand effects. Okay, it creates some mild inflation. And then, as you materialize, as the effects are being materialized, then the economy becomes more competitive, inflation will go down a bit. And this is also reflected in exports, and more competitive economy exports, a bit more.
Okay, and just to follow up on my first question, while you were presenting, so all this we see here is with the assumption that when the sanctions stop occurring, then we'll go back to the actual market, the Russian market, right? We'll have the previous customers and everybody.
Yes.
So if, like, you know, I know you don't have the results now, but if we assume that there is a new steady state, that you don't go back to these clients, because, I mean, as we discussed before, it might be Russian in a way that you lose this networking effect and you move to other markets, and then even if the markets open up, the Russians would say, you know, we don't care about you, have other markets now to care about. So, you know, you have a long-term new equilibrium effect in your model. So how would you think this would affect the main results of the model?
Then you will be constantly at this point.
Okay.
At a lower steady state. At a lower equilibrium.
So you end up worse eventually in the long
term? You end up worse, yes. You end up worse, but this I should have said it before presenting the results. What we are doing here is we try to isolate the effects of cutting exports, let's say, to Russia. This does not mean that Cyprus will be in a lower steady state, in a lower equilibrium forever. This is just the isolation effect. Okay. In general, if you see what happened in Cyprus, Cyprus GDP increased this year. Does not mean that Cyprus will be lower in a lower output for all this year. Cyprus, this is just the effect that we isolate. It sliced the GDP by this percent, but it might have gained it from elsewhere. Okay, this is the net effect. from Russia.
Thanks. Any other comments or questions?
I just want to make comments
please
about
do. Please do.
About the, can we go to the last slide, the administrative things?
Last, you mean this?
Yeah, I've still got a problem with the improved governance because, for example, lots of money went into trying to modernize the court system. And as far as I've followed from the news, the whole system crashed and then cases were left and there were more delays and now they've gone back to iJustice and it's been quite a disaster and they haven't really made the people accountable, the company that was supposed to set up this system. So that's huge delays. And also I was wondering, we've got very strong unions in Cyprus, so could that cause inflationary pressures because the protected groups sort of demanded holding hostage the governments?
Well, I will start from the last one.
Yeah.
From what I know, Cyprus is still one of the few countries in Europe that has this automatic readjustment of wages. And this is for unions mainly. They call it the COLA agreement. COLA agreement. So that was a concern, let's say, all these years with the increased inflation, the unions were, you know, trying, you know, to readjust their wages, but the state said at some point stop, we'll have to rethink what will happen in this thing. This, if you still, you know, if you, the longer you have this this readjustment in wages according to the inflation, of course, you can get some inflationary pressures. But this is, I think, is a bit not very much relevant what with the RRP of the sanction. This is a broader macroeconomic, let's say, an idiosyncratic characteristic of Cyprus. So I wouldn't relate this too much with the sanctions. Unions are still strong, of course, they require high, you know, to have this COLA agreement forever and things like that. But I wouldn't relate this to the sanctions or to the RRP. Regarding the improved governance, probably you are right, but I'm just taking evidence from the data. And the data, in fact, show that, you know, this thing does not go very well. As you see here, 2012, it was much lower, and then probably something happened. Probably the thing that you say, that there was a crash and then they had, you know, to somebody else had to take over, you know, and clean up the mess. And there is still a huge increase in this index and in the justice system and in the public sector, in the broader public sector, if I might say. But of course, in terms of, in macroeconomic terms, macroeconomically speaking, this is a huge, you know, loss in productivity. If you don't have a justice system that works, this cannot protect as well the product market, investors, and so on. How can you take initiatives? How can you resolve a single case, a commercial case, if it takes 3 years to resolve
the
case?
I can tell you from experience.
It's gone.
I've
so
got
this is
going back to 2008. Can you believe
imagine. So in terms of productivity, this is the evidence that we have, and this is what uses as an input in order to simulate our effects. So this is a bad thing to try to simulate, of course.
So
and in this regard, of course, to improve governance, including things, you know, putting in the same melting pot everything, of course requires, you know, improved governance that will try to, you know, to drive Cyprus into a new regional, into a new business, more advanced business or growth model. This is the way I see, this way I said, but this is, okay, my personal opinion at least.
Quite early, because there's also some reform of local governments as well, and that again, we sort of see how that pans out, because I think that's also had some issues.
Probably yes, but so. I guess my take on this is that all the governments, irrespective either of the local or the national government, they will try at least, or they will be, you know, they will be obliged to follow things coming from the recovery and resilience plans. There are many reforms in there that refer specifically to the corruption in the justice system. So something must must be done there, no?
I mean, something will be done, but the effectiveness of that something is
yes.
You know, so a bill will be taken to Parliament for yeah. Mm-hmm. But I wonder whether you can use kind of really. I mean, I understand that, like, in a way, you want to publish the paper in Economic Circle. You don't want to open the discussion about the effectiveness of reforms and so forth. But in a discussion that may be more kind of contextual and policy, maybe you can add a bit on, I don't know, past reports by the European Commission, the EBRD was in. Are they still producing, including the Cyprus in the transition report? I don't know. But then there would be some commentary also, some indicators on reform capacity and the efficiency of the report. And then you can use that to moderate the, you know, instead of saying, okay, you know, like, in order to go, you know, instead of saying, you know, Cyprus promised to you know, to go to the European average, but we know from these reports that they are likely to go more than 30% of the way or 80% of the way. And then use that as something to say that, you know, okay, at the extreme, you know, the gain from the reforms would be X percent of GDP, but in a scenario where Cyprus, you know, the effectiveness of implementation remains as in past years, it would only be 2% of GDP. Mm-hmm. I understand that essentially that would just make a proportional shift. Yeah, it won't, if you assume 80%, it probably will, you know, double the effect by 20%, so it's not going to.
Most likely, yes.
Yeah.
The other way of putting it is that it might make it more realistic. That is that I take it you're saying that if this is done, then this may be the effect. But going back to the previous point, this might not be done to the same extent. And like you were showing with the justice, the EU justice record, you were saying that there might have been a blip in the last, whatever it is, 3 years. If you were to extend the graph backwards and show that Cyprus, I don't know, has the last 10 years, has had a huge divergence with the EU average, that would suggest some kind of institutional stickiness in terms of getting the reform through. Similarly, with competitiveness, you were saying that we don't take into account the strength of the unions. Well, you would in terms of estimating the likelihood of an effect occurring.
This is very true. Just a very general reply to try to accommodate for all these comments. We can make the model even more realistic. Of course, we can introduce, you know, institutional factors, rent-seeking activities and things like that. We can include these things in the model. Given this feedback, probably we'll do some of them. But in a macroeconomic model, trying to assess all reforms always will be something incomplete.
Yeah, but it goes back to what Chancellor Scholz said, isn't it?
Yes, but it's not irresponsible. I mean,
it's not what?
Irresponsible. I think he called irresponsible. Yes, honestly irresponsible.
Oh, okay. Okay, yes, yes.
It's just an advice. I mean, he provides some estimates. I mean, it's not that things will happen for sure.
Can I ask a factual question? If we take the RRF in 2022, mm-hmm. and now 2024, are there any major revisions in priorities, in allocations?
Mostly related to the energy, to the energy component.
So that would be substantial or minor?
I have to check what happens for Cyprus, because Cyprus is very bad in terms of energy and climate-related things. Most things are going to be addressed, but this is a bit sensitive. I was not much allowed to refer to these things. Let me find it. Many things will be included through green taxation. So there will be a significant tax reform in Cyprus. They will include many new kind of taxes, like a landfill tax, manure tax, I don't even remember, water fees, additional water fees, road charges, and things like that. This is with regard to energy and environmental issues. That was a major, from the things that at least I know.
But you don't see any major shift to, say, solar subsidies or something like
that? No, this was already included, but they're going to reinforce through taxation and maybe some other, you know, minor things.
And just to add up from what I know from Cyprus, no, maybe, like, there is a bit of direction in terms of energy to change it, but nothing major, really. Like, Cyprus has three power plants using mazut, producing energy, highly emission intensive. You know, there's a bit of investment in renewables, but 10%, 15% so far. So nothing much changed, really, so to that extent.
Yes, I think the big part will come from the green tax, what they call green taxation. Still, it's going to be, I mean, now they are in the public consultation phase. They are about to finish it, and I think they will announce what the new tax system will be like in a few months, I guess. But this was not allowed to say.
Okay, I think we are out of time, actually, Stelios, but thank you very much indeed for coming along and reporting the project, and we look forward to seeing it complete on the written page.
Thank you very much.
Welcome there. Thank you to Stelios.